the Almost Perfect Podcast.
Welcome to the Almost Perfect Podcast, a celebration of fuck-ups, failures, and falling flat on your face. This is a podcast that believes you can learn from experience, but that experience doesn't have to be your own. Ha, I'm Bob Perfect, and I'm a functional fuck-up. Let's learn from somebody else's mistakes, and today we're learning from Tasman Naidu. Now, Tasman is an illustrator and comic creator, and I absolutely love her work. She's got some chops too. She studied at Michaelis. She did fine art all the way down in Cape Town. But lately these days, she mostly focuses on illustration and creating comics. And she's got an absolutely fantastic comic that I think a lot of you will enjoy. It's called Avocat and His Guac Rocket. It's about an apathetic cat that kind of just watches the world burn around him. And I feel like, you know, the millennials, and not just millennials, well, actually, you know, the kids that come after the millennials, whatever they're called, Gen something or other, might be slightly more posy than millennials. But yeah, if you're a millennial and you like avos and you like cats, well, you're probably going to like Avocat and His Guac Rocket. And if you're just a little bit cynical in general, it's the comic for you. She's only released one issue so far. It's a short comic, but it's got lots of extra things to it. It's lots and lots of little extras, which makes it quite cool. She's also released another comic book called The Rusty Bolt, which we chat about a little bit towards the end of the podcast. And I actually make a mistake. I mentioned like cyberpunk when I mean steampunk, but she explains what the comic is about. I'm not going to ruin it for you, but I just thought I'd mention that. I also made another mistake. What was it? In this one, I mention Chuck Law when I mean Chuck Jones, which is a big difference. Chuck Law is a sitcom creator, which, you know, obviously that's why his name's in my head there. But Chuck Jones was the dude who created a lot of cool cartoons back in the day. And I mention that because there's this really cool podcast called The Rule of Three, and they had Phil Jupitus on it. And he mentioned Chuck Jones. Well, the whole thing is about Chuck Jones. So go check that out. But Tasman and I do chat about that in the podcast. So yeah, I made a few mistakes. But you know what? It's called the Almost Perfect Podcast. So I get to get away with them. But this is a really cool conversation. I enjoy getting to know Tasman because I've kind of known her a little bit. Like from the outskirts, you know, we've chatted when we're out and I see her at the cons and stuff like that. And, you know, we've interacted quite a lot and I dig her work. I dig her work so much that I hired her to do the artwork for the Heat City Comedy Festival, actually. She did all the design work for the Heat City Comedy Festival and I loved it. We got a lot of compliments about it and I was really stoked about it in general. But yeah, like, you know, Tasman's work is just phenomenal. She's really, really good at what she does. And I figured, you know, it'd be cool to get to know her. It'd be cool to get to see who the person is behind the stuff. And it turns out, you know, she's a wonderful weirdo. And I love that we get like so many cool, like weird people on this podcast who grow up, you know, she grew up like a lot of us. I think a lot of us, judging by the people who hit me up in the DMs and stuff, you know, grew up a bit of an outcast and found herself through her art, you know, found herself through her imagination and her creativity. And nowadays that's, you know, her life, that's her career. She gets to create things and she gets to draw and she gets to, yeah, like it's a really cool conversation about a lot of different things, about, yeah, like about getting to do the things that you want to do, but also having to balance the work-life thing. You know, you guys know all about that, the stuff that you want to do versus the stuff that you have to do for money. And yeah, even stuff like Avocat versus Rusty Bolt is an interesting dynamic because, you know, Tasman's aware that there's meme potential with something like, you know, Avocat and His Guac Rocket. She knows that there's, you know, that hits into the pop culture zeitgeist quite nicely, whereas her other project, Rusty Bolt, not necessarily as much, whilst it is super dope as well. I actually got that comic a while ago now, and I've just got an Avocat, and they're both phenomenal. So I'm like, yeah, I'm a big fan of Tasman's work, and I'm looking forward to seeing how she grows, like, and how her career grows, how her work grows, how she gets out there more. We get into the con life, into what it's like as a creator here in South Africa, you know, selling your work at Comic Cons, not just, you know, the Comic Con, but Fan Con, Icon, and all the various cons that are around South Africa. We also talk about how it's all grown, you know, like how there weren't any of these things when we were growing up. And now there's lots of cool ways to interact with the arts and like for artists themselves to actually exhibit and to be seen and to, you know, sell their work. There's a big self-publishing community in the comic, you know, world in South Africa. And so, yeah, those are all the kinds of things that we get into on this podcast. I'm sure you're going to enjoy that quite a lot. Yeah, Comic-Con was absolutely dope. I picked up a few local comic books and I'm going to try and, you know, as time goes on, get in touch with the different creators. I picked up a lot of different business cards and that. And, you know, just, it's something that interests me, man. I'm super into comics and just nerd culture in general. And I feel like, you know, that's not really tapped into in podcasts in South Africa that much. Not quite the way I do it, I guess. And so I'm going to definitely try and get different kinds of artists as well as, you know, the musicians and actors and all, you know what this podcast is about. It's not just about one type of thing. So I want to try and cater to as many different people as possible. And these are the things that I really, you know, get a kick out of. I really enjoy chatting about these things. I really enjoy, yeah, just discussing Batman and the Joker endlessly, because it's something that's come up a few times before on this podcast. I want to give a big shout out. We've got a new patron on the Patreon, Alex Bailovich. I'm going to go with Bailovich. Yes. Alex Bailovich. Shout outs to you, man. Thank you for signing up to the Patreon account. Last week, I gave a little plea. I asked the peeps out there. I was like, yo, I need to get this other microphone fixed. And I really fucking do. But we'll get there. We'll get there. And, you know, you guys can help me do that by signing on to the Patreon account. We're also doing a giveaway this month. Last month, we did a 250 Rand voucher to HQ Gaming. This month, I'm giving away the Rusty Bolt. I'm giving away a copy of Avocat and his Guac Rocket, and also one of Luke Mulver's comics. I'm giving away one of his Sunday Slave comic books, and I think also there'll be a bunch of little stickers and extra things from the two of them to be given away to patrons, but not just to patrons, to people who also help me out by going over to the iTunes/Apple Podcast, whichever one you want to go to, because apparently they're two different things, some fucking how. But yeah, you can go over to those, and you just need to leave a comment. That's all you need to do, any comment. And then you screenshot that, and you send that to me, either via the social medias, or you can do it via the email, almostperfectpod@gmail.com. You can also go almost_podcast at Twitter. Facebook is the Almost Perfect Podcast. And I am on Instagram and I'm doing a thing, blah, 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 blah. If you've listened to other podcasts, you know that there's no content on there at the moment, but there will eventually be content there. But you can get in touch with me there. So that's Almost Perfect Podcast there. So yeah, go to iTunes or Apple thing, leave a review, take a screenshot, send that to me. There we go. You're entered into the podcast. You're entered into the competition. Alternatively, just sign up to the Patreon. Just give me your money, yo. Give me that money. And yeah, you'll be able to get into that competition just without doing anything. Plus, you'll be able to suggest guests. You'll be able to ask guests questions and just get involved in the podcast, in the behind the scenes things. You'll get to know about different guests ahead of time sometimes. And sometimes you won't. Sometimes I kind of, you know, like things happen, you know, not last minute, but last minute-ish. And so I don't always get that on the Patreon, but I am going to also try to think of other ways to, you know, make cool things for the Patreon account, make it work and that. And I know I chat about it a lot on here at the moment because obviously that's a thing I'm trying to grow so that I can make this thing more of a job than it is at the moment, because at the moment it's side project territory and I don't want it to be side project territory. I want it to be main project territory, and you can help me do that. So if you dig the podcast, go on over to the Patreon account. And how's this for an incentive? When we get to 20 patrons, I won't mention the Patreon account for at least a month, an entire month, okay? 31 days. Doesn't matter which month, we're going with 31 days from the time that, we get to 20 patrons on the Patreon account. then I'm never, not never, no, not never. That's not going to sustain me. But then I'm not going to mention the Patreon for at least a month. Sound like a good thing? I think that would be a good thing for all of us involved. So yeah, other than that, other than me trying to hit you up for money, I feel a bit like a carny here. So yeah, that's that. That's everything you need to know for now about the Almost Perfect Podcast. You'll also see at the moment, I am actually a little bit more active on the social media side of things when it comes to the Almost Perfect Podcast. So you can hit me up there. You can send us stuff, you know, tag the podcast, share the podcast. Let me know that you're sharing it and then I can share you. And then, you know, like we're like can just, I don't know how the thing works on Twitter anymore. Like, I don't know if retweeting people matters, if it's a incentive or something. But, you know, you can tag me on things and I might retweet it. And yeah, I would also just appreciate if you share the podcast. Guess that's all the promo stuff out the way. That's all the, you know, introductory stuff out the way. I guess it's time for us now to get to know Tasman Nadu. In her own words, here it comes. It's the Almost Perfect Podcast with Tasman Nadu.
So how are you living, Tasman?
I'm good. How are you, Bob?
I'm pretty good. It's been a cool week. I've actually been looking forward to this chat because I don't actually really know you that well. We've hung out a bit over the years, you know, out at the pub and that, but it's always like, yeah, like at the pub over a few drinks, just talking about like...
A lot of drinks, actually.
Yeah, very few, like many, many few drinks. Yeah, it's always been quite fun. I've always been... You know, I like your opinions, I like your vibe, I like your work, so...
Thank you.
I'm stoked to finally get you here. Recently, you were at Comic-Con.
Yes, I chose not to... It was a little bit of a mistake on my part, but I didn't get my own stall, but I just, like, kind of had a little bit of Luke's. I convinced him to let me put myself on his table, which was cool.
Luke Mulver.
Luke Mulver, yes, my partner. My partner in crime and comics. And, yeah, it was a great, great con. I really enjoyed it.
Did you do last year's Comic-Con?
I did, but last year I also just helped him. I didn't have any of my stuff available, but he was in, like, a lot of panels. I assumed he was going to be in more panels this time, too. So, and it's just, like, really, it's a bit difficult to try to, like, go for a panel and then you're stressed about your school. So I was like, don't worry, dude, I got you. This year, there weren't as many panels with local guys, so he was at the stall, like, as much as I was, so...
That's also, I guess, there's more local guys, you know, to rotate, essentially, over the years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But how did you find this year's con in comparison to last year's con?
I think there were, like, a lot of things that they had improved. Like, I know that it's small things, but, like, the artists' exhibitor badges...
Yeah, yeah.
They weren't completely useless and didn't, like, break as soon as you tried to put them on. And also the venue is amazing compared to last year.
Yeah, that's the one thing I heard from everyone, that the venue was...
Yeah, the venue was really awful last year. It was at Kyalami race course and it was just really spread out and, you know, disastrous. And the artist alley was in this big, like, tent and it was, like, God. Really
so
windy. It felt like it was going to just blow away and it was hot and stuff, but... Yeah, this year was really, really great. It was, like, a lot bigger, and there were so many more people, and it was just insane. But it was, like, in the best possible way. The one thing I think was the food. The food was awful. I don't know if you ever had any of that food, but it was just...
I had the chicken wrap, which was pretty decent.
There were chicken wraps? Oh.
Well, it depends on where you... There were multiple food sections. There was also a pizza section.
I got so sick from that pizza. Like.
Okay. I had one slice of pizza at the one place. It was pretty decent. But my trick, because of all the lines, was I just left the venue and went to the restaurant, like, outside. Because it was the cafe, like, just across the road. They had, like, dope breakfast stuff and, like, coffee. And then like an Indian food place like down the road, so some of us walked down there. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's definitely what I'm going to be doing next year. Because eventually we just like brought our own food or we like went out for dinner afterwards. But
yeah, for me, like the lines were definitely not a good time. Like, yeah. I'm not about that life. Like, I hate that. That's why the like I would recommend if anyone's gonna go to Comic-Con next year, go on the last day. The last day is the best day, unless you want to see like the biggest names on the stage and stuff.
The last day is the most chilled because you can also take your time to like look at everything and like, you know, you're not like rushed from stall to stall. Like, yeah, you just have more time for everything.
Yeah, it's such a dope vibe. And also, like, from a consumer standpoint, there's also a lot of discounts and stuff because people don't necessarily want to take all their stock back home with them, all the creators and stuff. So, yeah, you can get some really good specials and really good deals. Like,
Absolutely. Some good deals from both the local creators and also, like, some of the bigger, like, merch stores. Like, they have these crazy sales on like a bunch of their things, ranging from plushies to comics. Like, it's pretty cool.
And there's also like a cool, like as a creator, you guys like trade a lot of stuff.
Yeah, on the last day we all like trade because like essentially if you've got a comic that's a similar price to someone else, and we try to like all have the same kind of price range for our stuff.
Especially for local stuff.
Which is all self-produced and self-published and stuff. So on the last day we all just kind of go and like sign each other's comics and like, you know, it's kind of like the last day of school.
Yeah.
You know, like you're like trading comics and artworks and it's really lovely. Yeah.
So like a cool camaraderie builds over the course of the
weekend. Yeah, I mean like you get to know people, like we talked about a bit earlier, like one side of these people, and like they become like your convention family because you've been sitting with them and sweating with them and like, you know,
covering
each other's stalls and moaning or like laughing with or like sleeping under the tables and, you know, with all these people. So yeah, you do form really strong bonds that kind of carries to the next cons as you go along.
And you get to see like different people at each con and that. But like, was this the biggest con you guys have ever done?
Yeah, in terms of comics, like I was privileged enough to go to Def Con in Las Vegas years ago. So that was like the biggest con I've ever been to. But this, in terms of comics, yes, absolutely. South Africa, yeah. It's amazing how big it was.
Did it surprise you like that? Yeah, like something, because it surprised the fuck out of me, like to see that many people there. Like, genuinely, on the first day, there were, like, over 60,000 people there. And I was like, there's no way they're going to pull 60,000 people. I mean, you know, big bands don't even pull like that. Like, you know, big artists, Casper Nyovest, you know, like, struggled, like, to pull 60,000 people. So, yeah, like, I was quite surprised that there were that many people who were into this, like, kind of thing. So did it surprise you at all?
I guess I was a little bit more prepared because I'd been to the first one.
And wasn't as big.
Yeah, and I mean, like, they sold out a few of the days on the last year's event as well. So I did kind of expect it to be that big, but, like, nothing really prepares you to see that many people. Like, walls of people just kind of, like, passing you by.
Do you feel like you're in a bit of a fishbowl like situation?
Yes, absolutely. Or like in the middle of like some sort of zombie horde and people are like rargh, everything.
Oh man, and like you must get like, actually, since you've done quite a few cons now, do you know when someone's going to buy something or when they're not? Like,
no,
do you...
it's really frustrating actually because sometimes you get, we actually like the one girl at FanCon actually had a FanCon bingo and she had like various things. So the one
people
was like,
say, I'm coming back later.
Yeah, like I'm coming back later, or
people never believe me when I say that. And then I do come back later. They're
because
always
we
surprised.
Always hear that and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm never gonna see that guy again.
Yeah, I mean sometimes some of you are gonna see me again later, but some of you are, because I'm doing calculations.
It is like it's better than like, you know, like the certain people also like come and like read your entire comic and then leave. Say thank you and then leave, and they don't buy anything, and that for me is like way worse
etiquette.
It's kind
of like stealing, like in
it is like a friend of mine actually sellotaped the last few pages of his comic shut so that people could, and had a little sign there saying if you want to read any more you gotta buy it. Yeah,
Because you don't want to be rude, I guess. Like, you don't want to just say to someone, like, hey, can you stop reading my comic book?
I mean, like, my comic is also only 6 pages long. So, you know...
But you've got a lot of... Yeah, for the story, of course. But there's a lot of other visual elements that, like...
Yeah, well, with Evercat, like, I kind of marketed it as a zine slash, like, adventure book slash art book, sort of amalgamation of all those things. So there's, like, a lot of art, a lot of, like, little puzzles and, like, you know, mystery things that I've hidden in there. And a lot of, like, little prompts that I've kind of dropped in that I'm going to carry on with the next issues. But I'm definitely not going to be printing it in the same format. It's probably going to be a bit longer with, like, okay, a more of a story arc, which I've already started doing.
But, like, how come this one is so short? And then did you do the extra stuff just to fill the pages? Or do you enjoy, like, that kind of thing of making the product, like, a zine? Like, making it more than just a comic?
I really did like the element of making it, like, a zine. And also, like, I really love drawing locations and stuff. I like to draw places that I'd actually like to go and, like, dive into.
Looking at your website, I can kind of see that, yeah.
So, like, I wanted to create something, and I didn't really know where I was going with Evercat. Evercat started off as a 4-panel, like, kind of very pessimistic kind of little comic, and it grew in popularity, I'm pretty sure because of the name, Evercat and his Guac Rocket.
Yeah, pretty good name, and also, like, you've got some skills, you can draw.
But, like, yeah, so I think, like, it kind of, like, I had to do something like this first book so that I could go on further, because I had to get all the stuff out of my mind and kind of figure out the world, and now I feel comfortable with, like, doing a longer form for narrative, you know.
Yeah, so what is the world? Like, it's not just Evercat destroying everything anymore. Like,
no, actually, Evercat's never actually destroyed anything. He's
well, he saved the world. I saw the fire. Oh, he was ambivalent. That was the thing. He didn't save anyone. But the world was on fire.
The world was on fire, and he was like, you know what? Sometimes you gotta let things happen this way.
I take it you're in quite an apathetic stage of your life when you came up with that. Or...
Yeah, I am. I'm actually. I really do like pessimism.
But are you pessimistic?
I don't think so. I think it's a very interesting philosophy. Like, I'm a huge fan of, like, Tom Ligotti, and, you know,
I don't know Tom Ligotti, I don't think.
He was have you watched True Detective?
Oh, yeah.
You know Rust Cole? His whole, like, okay, kind of vibe was based on, like, the writings of Tom Ligotti and a few other people, like,
I probably wouldn't, like, know his stuff.
He's written this brilliant book called The Conspiracy Against the Human Race. And
sound familiar.
You can download it, and it's basically, it just talks about how, you know, consciousness is actually a really shit thing to happen to us.
I agree 100%.
Yeah,
like,
you would actually love this book then. Like,
yeah.
I'll send you...
Yeah, no, like, I don't want to have kids because I feel like...
Oh, yes,
putting
there's a lot of that
in onto,
there,
like, another human being is just, like, a really fucked up thing.
Like, yeah. Well, I guess I also got that vibe from your comedy show, your solo.
Oh, yeah.
So.
The end of the world. Yeah, like... Well, that's not so much the consciousness, that's just so much the experience. But even just the moral question of, like, you know, should we create another conscious being? Like, it's a big one, man, because you don't know what that person's going to go through.
Essentially, like, my understanding of, like, life, and it's mostly suffering. I mean, like, unless you're really, really privileged and, like, I don't know, you... be born in, like,
I don't know
a
if it's mostly suffering. I mean, then you're saying mundane is just suffering. Like, I think it's mostly boring with suffering. Like,
there's a lot of suffering, I think. There's a lot of suffering. I mean, like, even...
But I think people who are suffering unless, like, they're suffering from true poverty and, like, suffering true suffering, a lot of people who we might consider to be suffering are actually, like, sometimes, you know, mentally, like, happier than, like, the middle classes.
That's true. But, like, in my mind, it's, like, it's more difficult for me to be consistently happy than it is to be just, like, you know, gripped with this, like, ah, oh, but what is it all for? You know, like, why would anyone want to procreate? Why would anyone want to actually exist now? Like, you look around at, like, all the things that are going on and you're like, oh, everything, like, sucks, man.
That's a weird thing. Like, I feel like being a kid at this time is like a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Because you're like, you got all the best toys. All the best toys. Games, technology, everything. Like, you got VR, man. Like, you are like, you're growing up with like virtual reality games. Like, that is awesome. That was my dream as a kid. But also, you might not live past 50.
Yeah, like, exactly.
But I might not live past 50, so who knows?
These are the things that plague me. Well, they don't really plague me anymore.
They plague Avocat a little bit?
Yeah, I think I channel it all into Avocat and let him deal with it because he's more equipped and he's more, you know.
He's a little bit of a bastard, though. He's Avocat a he, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. He's actually based on my cat, Salem.
I would assume so, yes.
My little buddy, he's been with me for 6 years, and he is
Salem's gotten some shout-outs in comic books. And
yes. I tend to dedicate most of my work to Salem. Because he's been my little, like, companion, you know. Like, and I love him. He's, like, the closest thing to a child I'd ever have.
That's been like the biggest, like, hardest thing about, like, moving here, because I've, like, my cats moved in with my mom, like, because couldn't take cats here. Loki, yeah. And like, as a freelancer who lives alone and works at home, that's Tasman, by the way.
Sorry.
No, don't even apologize. I'm just giving the context for people. It ain't me. No, but like, that's literally one of the things that, like, has been difficult, is just, like, not having Loki around. And Loki's a little bastard, like, not a great cat, like, like, I love her, but, like, you know,
she's
other
a bit
people,
of a dick.
Yeah, yeah, not even just a bit, just complete and utter, like, but that's, you know, her vibe, like, and that's cool, like, I respect it. But just having her around was so nice, you know, just having a cat to talk
Someone to come home to, even though I live with Luke too, but, like, you know, like, Salem's always there to, like, you know, just
not
come.
Not argue with you. Not fuck up your vibe, like.
Well, Salem kind of fucks my vibe up because, like, if he's, like, trying to play with me, I think he also thinks of me as his, like, playmate. Because I got him when he was only, like, 3 weeks old. So I don't think he really associates me with being his mom, more like his playmate than.
And you're also probably not very assertive with him, are you?
Well, I tried to be, but he's so cute. I'm just going to look at those little bean toes. He'll, like, come and tackle me, and he plays, like, he's a huge cat. He scares dogs away. Like, you know, he's huge. He's huge, and he shrieks if he's not happy, and he, like, tackles me down, and, like, you know, I've got scars all over my body from my little sweet boy.
So you've channeled all of this into a comic book.
Yeah.
Avocat and his guac rocket. So, why Avos? Why, like, ooh, like, are Avos? You just a big fan of Avos, or were you,
not
like,
even really.
Were you, like, pop culture? Like, this is gonna, like,
I don't know, I think it might have been, like, okay, well, this would, like, sell a lot of, because people like cats, and people like cats.
So it was fully corporate.
Well, no, well, part of it, and also, like, at the time, I found this, the most perfect Avo, and you know when you find that Avo, and I lifted it up in the air, and my cat happened to be, like, you know, kind of sitting, like, just in the room.
And it just looked like a
And it just looked like it would work together. But, I mean, there have also been, like, lots of iterations of cats sitting in Avos all over the internet. So
really?
There's, like, tons of little, like, it's a thing.
I didn't know it was a thing.
But there's no other
Guac Rocket.
Guac Rocket, yeah.
Which is what Avocat travels Earth in for now.
Well, he travels all over the universe. And
does
he does.
I haven't yet. You've gifted me with your full comic now, so I'm pretty keen. Because I've only really seen the stuff that you've got online, and then a few things, like, when, like at the different cons, like yeah. I'll see what you've like put out, and so I've got an understanding of the universe a little bit.
Well, it's kind of, it's grown into something like that, because I really like adventure, and like, you know, I'm also a huge horror fan, but like adventure, like
there's no with real my horror art. In there.
Well, there will be. I'm trying to write some stuff in.
Are we doing a horror avocats comic?
Yes, that might be coming next, but like
that sounds awesome.
But you know, there's almost like an Indiana Jones.
Yeah,
kind
that's
of type.
Very much what I feel.
Yeah,
like.
So there's a lot of like, you know, exploring and like figuring things out, and that's what Avocat and his companion, Crate Cat, who's based on another cat I know called Tigger, and they're like crazy adventures. My plan is to like actually put all of our animals that we have like in my comic. I don't want to have any people because I don't like people, so
that makes sense. And how things been going in terms of like Avocat and Squawk Rocket? Has it, like, you know, are sales ever increasing, or like how is the whole, like, you know, having to sell your comic books like at a, like a con kind of thing? Like
at a con they do really well, I think. Like, you know, they, people see this ridiculous absurd kind of comic and they're like, okay, I didn't know comics could do that.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, and then like they pick it up and it's like, it's very, it makes people smile. But there's also this like darker kind of undertone to my work that, you know, you could pick up or you, you know.
So is there any Garfield like involved in Avocat?
No, I wouldn't say Garfield. I guess like in some way like.
It's quite cynical, but yeah. not quite as quippy. Not quite
yeah.
As...
Like Garfield is also like, you must remember, confined to about 4 panels.
Of course, but like, you know, Garfield's four panels, like over a long period
of
time.
He's got a lot of like condensed cynicalism.
Yeah, whereas Avocado gets to be spread out over a whole like 6 pages, I guess.
So okay. I guess Garfield does in some way, he probably does inform me in some subconscious way.
Like,
you
know,
how could it not?
Avo is Avocat's lasagna, essentially.
Oh, yes, there's a food element. Yeah, okay, I like that.
But how did you get into all of this? How did you get into creating comics? How did you, because you were telling me like just now you studied fine art, like, so how do you go from studying, you know, fine art? Was it always a thing you were into, like you've always loved comics and that's why you got into studying fine art? Or,
well, I'd have to go back into my past if you don't mind.
Well, we can do that. That's kind of a bit of a thing that we do here.
Okay.
On the podcast. So
I was born in Pietermaritzburg, and when I was about I know, thank you. When I was about 2, my family moved to Greytown.
Cool.
So I actually grew up in Greytown. I'm a country gal.
Yeah, great. I used to go to school in Wartburg, so...
No way!
Yeah. Yeah, I went to boarding school there when I was young,
Oh,
so.
That's crazy. I went to Hermansburg.
Okay, that's right there as
I
well,
I had no idea. Crazy. But, so I grew up in Greytown, and I was always, like, I've always loved cartoons, and I loved drawing, and, you know, I had a grandfather who is an artist... a carpenter, but also an artist. Like, he used to paint the back of buses, you know, like those ridiculous tigers and sunsets and stuff. He used to do that sort of thing.
That's so dope.
He was like quite a Renaissance man, and he was quite eccentric, so he'd like, you know, pitch up at our house with like a box of chicks, like all these little baby chicks, or like
okay.
a guinea pig. We just like, we'd always have animals in our house, and we actually had quite a fairy tale upbringing, because we were like, you know, these barefoot wild-haired kids like always rescuing birds and nursing them back to health, or like playing with mm-hmm. chameleons.
That
in the
sounds
garden.
Like a great town existence.
Yeah, it was amazing. And but I was always like kind of weird person even back then. Like I used to
even by those standards
I used to read a lot, so like I was constantly
that's big weird when you're young.
Yeah, I'd read so much that, like, sometimes I'd get into trouble with my parents because we'd be on holiday or something and they'd be like, can you please stop reading and join in with the family?
But those worlds, like, that's the thing, like, you're in, like, when, especially when you're young and you're reading, like, you're in, like, a whole new universe, a whole new world, and it's so much better than, like, your own family.
Yeah.
Like, other people's families in books are so much either cooler or worse, and, like, it's just...
Like, you know, the fact that, you know, you can go and, like, fly up into the clouds with the Dragon King or whatever. Like,
yeah.
I mean, so, but yeah, my parents were actually, strangely enough, for an Indian kind of conservative family. Well, they're not actually that conservative.
But I'm sure they would have encouraged the reading.
They did, just
but
not
the material.
Like, they were a bit concerned about me with regards to me socializing.
Okay.
I wasn't a very social person, like, from a very early age. I had friends, but it was, like, you know. And as I grew up, I found it even more difficult. And when we moved to Durban, it was even worse, because all of a sudden... Because
you're an outsider from Maritzburg and, like...
Well, from Greytown, worse. And then, like, I come in, like, I'm trying to integrate into a school like Durban Girls College.
Oh, wow.
Which was excruciating. It was, like, awful.
Because college is such a, like, just mainstream fucking, like, not even mainstream, like, it's upper class, like, hoity-toitery, like,
yeah.
Bullshit. Like,
I mean, like, coming from a person who used to spend almost every weekend on, like, bombs and, like, catching chameleons and whatever, to come and, like, you know, be belittled for not knowing what Gucci is... Or a GHD or whatever, like,
yeah.
You know, it was like a huge shock, and it sent me down into a very dark space, because I battled a lot with trying to make friends and trying to, like, actually find my place in the world.
But, like, did you feel like at least you had, you know, books to go to?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Books and my art, and, like, I'm really grateful
so you've
for
been
my art department.
Drawing from a young age?
Oh, yeah. Since I was a kid, like, I mean, I remember my grandfather even trying to teach me maths, like, simple maths. And, like, all I'd do is, like, make all the numbers into little characters instead of actually doing the sums.
See, like, I was good at maths, and I wish, like, I would, like, I've never been good at, like, visual arts. Like, I can take a photo, but, like, everything else, I'm just, like, not, like, don't have the hand-eye coordination.
You know,
it's practice. It is
practice, and it's like a muscle. So, I mean, like, any creative thing is like a muscle. You just have to be interested in it
enough to do it.
To exercise that muscle.
So, I guess, like, I wish I had the ability, but I don't want to put in the work. So.
Yeah. Well, see, there it is. I think, like, that was my escapism from, like, you know, being quite socially weird, and I guess I'm still a bit socially weird, and, you know, not being able to fit in anywhere ever, and always feeling like an imposter. Like, drawing was definitely, like, my kind of... Like, I was like, I'd always think, at least I can go home and draw.
Yeah.
You know, at least if people are bullying me or whatever, at least I could go home and draw. Or at least I could, like, go and read this book that they haven't even begun to comprehend, so.
Yeah, like, reading for me was definitely, like, my escape in a big way when I was younger, because I was bullied a lot as well at school, and, like, I became a library monitor.
Oh, wow,
and, like,
that's cool.
Yeah, so... It was a cool escape from, like, just everyone.
I
could just go chill in the library at breaks. And, like,
yes, I did very similar things.
Yeah, like, and, yeah, it was dope to, A, just, you know, have that space, and, B, like, just have these different worlds and have these, like, cool, like, you learn so much, like, without ever, you know, leaving the house, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I love about... Like, comic books, it's what I love about books, it's what I love about just sharing of worlds, you know, like, we're sharing that creative experience, and, like, it's also, though, from the other side, from a creator, like, side, do you ever, like, think about the impact your work will have, like, on people?
I do, but, yeah, like, I guess, like, in this day and age, there is, like, a bit of, and I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble for this, but, like, there's a kind of, like, unsaid pressure on me to reference the fact that I'm female and I'm a person of color and I'm into comics, but like, you know, I've always existed on the fringe. I've never really been part of any like social groups, so I don't really, I think it would be very
like even the POC thing, like you don't want to be like
I think it would be very inauthentic if I had to suddenly just start talking about that. So my work definitely just talks about the fringelings, as I like to call it. Like the people that are like kind of left out of the, you know, main stuff, and they just do their own thing because that's what we do. So yeah, I do think a lot about my impact, and I hope that, you know, my work actually just is inspirational to young people to know that they can actually make whatever the hell they want to make, and that's okay, you know.
I feel you. See, I was thinking more just like the other side of things, with the actual like content.
Oh.
Like
sorry.
No, like, you know, like, you know, because the Joker film's just come out, so I haven't seen it yet. But, you know, everyone, well, not everyone, like people are like, it's the best movie ever. Other people are like, how can this movie be made? And so there's just this big debate at the moment about, you know, art. I mean, there has been for the last few years, I guess, about, you know, what's art's actual impact and how much responsibility does the artist have for the impact of their art. So I was just wondering what your thoughts are.
I think that if you don't, if you, like the Joker movie, I haven't watched it either, but honestly,
I'm keen to.
Me too. I think it looks amazing and I'm very excited for it. And it reminds me a bit of the Alan Moore book called The Killing Joke.
Yeah, which was fucking dark.
Dark as shit.
But I enjoyed it.
But, like, the thing is, like, you know, a character like the Joker is in public. It is in the collective consciousness. We know about Joker. We know what he's all about. This is, like, a character study. It's not an aspirational movie of what you should or should not do. And I think, like, that annoys me because, like, you know, people should be able to make that distinction and to say, okay, well, this is a beautiful story. It's not, like, black and white, this is right and this is wrong. It's, like, there's so many gray areas to it, and that's okay. And
but do you think people are losing the fact that that's what art is? Like, or that's
I think so, definitely. I mean, even the fact that we're having this debate, then, I think the director of the
I disagree with some of the shit he's been saying lately, but
well, I don't know what he's been saying, but like, just as about a purely more culture, just
meaning that he can't tell jokes anymore, essentially.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Okay, that's slightly problematic, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you can't make like
a great film.
If
I disagree with it, I can still enjoy your work.
Yeah, like, exactly. And I mean, like, he did say something about how we all kind of worship John Wick, who's also a very similar kind of character. Been, like, you know, gone through his traumas and blah blah blah, but he just, like, literally, he's got 3 movies where he's just, like, literally going around killing people.
Yeah, just the way he's framed is as, you know, a vigilante good guy.
Yeah,
like, exactly. He's the Batman, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
so it's
but whereas the Joker as a character, like, I think, I mean, I haven't seen the movie, so I can't comment really, but, like, I think it might be a bit different than the way it's always been, in that the Joker's always just been the, you know, the funhouse mirror of Batman.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's just saying they're the same guy.
Yeah.
Like, that's always been the criticism. That's always been the thing that they've always said with the Joker is,
yeah,
Batman is just the guy who's doing the same thing as a good guy. Like, essentially.
Because if you actually break it down, Batman is a really psychologist. Like, I mean, he is a nutcase.
He's a psychopath.
He is a psychopath. Like, he goes around, like, okay, granted, he doesn't kill people. But
it depends on
the early iterations of Batman, I guess he used to carry a gun, and but like the later iterations.
But it's also, I mean, even just the movies, like, you know, like stuff that he does definitely kills people.
True.
There's definitely,
he's still like this multi-millionaire who's decided to put his money towards donning the suit and
space travel even, like in the Justice League, like in the comics and stuff.
The Justice
like
League is
the
a
dude
different
like
kiddo.
Builds the dude builds like a whole like space like thing, and it's just like, yeah, this is you know, this is just our thing up here. Like we can just chill up here. And like in orbit, no stress, because I'm a billionaire. Like we funneling. How's this money? That's also the thing with Bruce Wayne. How is all this money being kept off the fucking books?
I don't know.
All this bat technology is somehow the dude's like.
I don't know.
Mad. There must be some mad tax issues there. He's
no,
bribing.
Well, not in the States. They kind of let those things slide.
He's in the Cayman Islands. Yeah. That would be an interesting Batman book. The
Actually,
finances
they do...
of Batman.
I would definitely read that. there is actually a comic that came out, I think, in the last 2 years or something, about how they've switched the roles completely. So Batman, as a white privileged millionaire, is actually the bad guy. And the Joker is actually
as a working class hero.
As a working class hero, which I haven't read it yet, but
I mean that's why I get Joker as like a problematic character in that like too many people like relate to him as like a bad guy. Like you know, like he's never been an anti-hero. Like he's not an anti-hero. He's just a villain.
He's a villain.
Just a straight up villain.
But he's also like he's got those cartoonish kind of elements, but he's also got those sympathetic. It's like. I don't know if you've ever watched Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
I don't know if I have. No,
but there's
so.
This brilliant character.
I can't remember which Star Trek I've seen. Like,
yeah,
I used to be on SABC like back in the day.
But there's this brilliant character called Ducat. He's a Kardashian. And Kardashian? Kardashian? I always get this wrong. Well, either one works. Which is like this reptilian kind of race.
Yeah.
And their planet kind of occupied another planet called Bajor in a kind of like Palestinian Israeli / Holocaust kind of, you know. And he is a great villain because he does not think that he is a villain.
Yeah.
He thinks that what he is thinking and his like ideology is right.
I mean, that's kind of been what Marvel's done with Black Panther and then also
oh
with,
yeah, I guess I only just watched Black Panther. I need to still I don't really know much about superhero stuff, so bear with me here.
We'll get into that actually just now. That's pretty cool. But yeah, like Black Panther and even Thanos, you know.
Well,
like,
actually Killmonger, Luke even said this.
Yeah.
And he actually thinks that Killmonger is quite a sympathetic and cool character. Like
yeah, he is. Like
he wanted to give all that power to the world so that, am I getting this right?
To a degree, but at the same time, like, well, that was the what he said, but the at the same time, the way people enact things and the actual consequences of their actions are also, like, his motivations to a degree were partially... like,
noble.
Excusable.
Okay.
Like, noble to...
Yeah.
Not, I don't know if noble is correct, but excusable.
Excusable. Let's go with excusable.
Is definitely there. But, yeah, like, I mean, it critiqued a lot of, you know, the Black Panther... Well, not the Wakandan way of life and everything. And, like, you know, he had good points. It's the same thing as, like, Thanos to a degree. But, like, if you're, like, looking at... Like, I don't know. People, like, obsess over Thanos these days as, like, this ultimate villain. And, like, you know, he was so considered and this and that. It's like, no, he's a fucking idiot. Like,
I don't know. I haven't.
Sorry,
watched,
you haven't
I'm
seen
sorry.
It. That's totally
but, like,
fine.
I am going to watch all the. I've watched, I think, the first Avenger movie.
So, like, I just did the
it's
thing
beautiful.
That I'm gonna.
It's a beautiful movie.
I just did the thing that I'm gonna, like, ask you a question about. But as a comic creator, do people automatically expect you to know everything about superheroes?
Yes. Honestly, I don't. And I've never actually been, like, really into superheroes. I like the darker kind of, like, like,
well, you mentioned Killing
the
Joke.
The Killing
like.
Joke.
So I assume the Batman in general, like your
Batman
Dark Knight
like,
stuff.
Yeah, and I like Neil Gaiman's writing on like Batman.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like I've actually
even enjoyed Sandman. Then
yeah, I like Sandman. I like my favorite comic is probably something that no one's ever heard of. It's called Like a Velvet Glove Cast in Iron. It's
okay.
By a guy called Dan Clowns, Klaus, sorry. Thinking about the Joker. Dan Klaus, and he's a resident of Oakland, California.
Okay.
And he is quite possibly my favorite comic artist and writer, because he writes such strange comics. Like, I'll lend you this book. It's so weird, but it's also got its own, like, kind of, it's just like the weirdest thing I've ever read and picked up, and I just loved it so much. I've read it, like, every time I pick it up and read it, and I do this routinely, I like have to stop myself from like reading it again, you know, straight afterwards. It's one of those books.
Wow.
You know, so it really had, like, when I was in college, and going back to college and schooling and stuff, fine art, my school,
I was actually going to ask you about it just now.
I studied at Michaela's School of Fine Arts, part
down
of UCT
in Cape Town, yeah.
And
very good school for people, like, well, in terms of
fine art not, like, in terms of people like me. Like, I don't know how I actually got through that school, but
really,
they did have,
so why did you go for fine art?
Honestly, like, I really had no idea what I wanted to do after high school.
Knew you wanted to be artistic.
I just wanted to be artistic, and I think I had a very naive sense of what art and being an artist was. And I kind of jumped to the first kind of thing that I thought I'd enjoy. And when I went there, I realized it really, really almost destroyed me. It was also really dark. My high school and my college years were like the worst years of my life, because they were just so dark, and like I couldn't find my feet. And
sounds about right. High school was horrible for me.
High school, yeah. It's a horrible. Children are fuckers. It's like awful people.
And also, it's the school structure and the school system.
And the school structure
creates like this vibe. Like, I mean, life in general creates the vibe of like, you know, like, do I belong here? Like, because, you know, the structures are so confining. Like, something like Michaela's, I can imagine for you, could be very rigid. Like, even though it's not meant to be. Like, other people might find it's, like, this cool place where they learn
absolutely
to express themselves.
Absolutely. Some people thrived. I just wasn't that kind of person. I also, like, my art style was just not conducive to
to fine art.
Fine
no.
art at all. Like, I'm an illustrator. I don't consider myself an artist, really. I try to always say I'm a graphic artist or I'm an illustrator because of my time at Michaela's.
Yeah.
But the one great thing was we had really amazing theory lecturers, and our one lecturer did this whole, like, for I think a term, we did a thing on comics, and
fuck
we
yes.
went through, like, you know, South African comics and like bitter comics.
Like, bitter
that
comics
was like
would
really
be the one. And then, like,
that was really big at one stage.
Did they go through like the stuff from the '80s and that? Just like
a little bit.
The dirty
and
shit.
Yeah, there was some like really gross, like
yeah,
awful stuff. But that was like one of the things that really opened my eyes. And then
bitter comics is fucking for South Africa so important. And like
it is. It
but
really is.
We'll get maybe get into that just now.
So then in my in my Michaela's library, Michaela's library, they also had the most amazing comic book section. And it was something that I'd never seen. I mean, this is like a girl from, you know, Grey Town in the middle of nowhere, where I was only exposed to the occasional Archie or Tintin or sometimes.
So you only go into comics like...
Well, I was always interested in comics, even growing up. And like, we'd go to CNA or whatever, and like, well, PNA, I don't even think
we had
a
CNA.
Yeah. And
well,
I'd
CNA
get, like,
bought out like that Italian store or something. Like,
oh.
Like, I've still got a bunch of comics where, like, I would like, where CNA used to have these bins where you get like £5 comics.
Yeah. So I would go and like just grab all of these things. Like I think I could get like an Archie for like a rand a piece or something. And my dad, I only found out much later, my dad was actually a huge comic book nerd when he was growing up. So he came from a really poor upbringing, and he'd have to do a paper route to subsidize his, you know, family income. His father was disabled, so he couldn't work. And he would use a tiny portion of their money to buy a comic every week. And he said, like, if he still had that collection, it probably would have been worth so much.
I'd nearly cried when, okay, well, he's not like my actual grandfather, but he is essentially, once told me that, yeah, he gave away his collection of Spider-Man and Hulk comics. He just literally bought, like, growing up.
Oh no.
Like, into his 20s.
Like, probably worth so much. Yeah.
Like, not even just the, you know, what they're worth, just like, I want to read them. Yeah. Like, I just want to, like, because you said, yeah, if I'd known you liked comic books, I would have given them to you. Like,
yeah, my dad as well. Because, like, I don't think he really expected, like, he's a doctor. Both my parents were at the time in the medical field, and they didn't expect.
Such an unfortunate stereotype. Like, was there any pressure for you? Like,
No. They saw me and they were like, okay, we're just going to let her do whatever the hell she wants. And
that's,
you know,
cool, because you said like they're like, we're a little bit conservative. But
a little,
like,
bit conservative in the sense that, you know, we weren't allowed to have like boyfriends and cell phones.
So typical Indian family.
But my mom was quite the hippie in other regards. Like, she was really into nature. She was really into the garden. She was really into animals. Like, animals also just love my mom. It's weird. But she also was never very religious at the time. Since, like, she's had issues, so now she's like actually gone back to her religion. But so we grew up being like kind of half Muslim, half Tamil, but we were raised as being atheists.
Okay.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
On my dad's side, they were Tamil. My mom's side, they were Muslim, but we were never as a family religious at all.
So we were
quite unique in a certain way. Like that. We weren't ever, like, forced to be religious at any point in our lives. We tried it out, but it just never felt right. So
I can imagine it must be quite difficult for parents to try and, you know, figure out how do we make this thing happen? Like, and or, like, what do you teach?
Like, I mean, I don't know. It must have been difficult. But I think they were more concerned with, like, us... They're both very, my parents, they've since divorced, but they're both very much into knowledge and just educating yourself. So I think that was like, that took the place of like, you know, shoving religion down our throats. They just wanted us to like be informed and know things and, you know, whatever we did, do it well, sort of
thing. So they must have been quite happy when you're like, I want to do fine art.
Yeah, they were like, okay, at least she's like settled on something. So, like, you know.
And then, so Michaela's had dope comic books.
Yeah, they had some dope comic books. And I had a few really amazing lecturers. And it really opened my eyes to what comics could actually do. Which I was a little bit like, you know, I didn't know what comics could actually do until that point.
Because
and
other than that, you would have, like, Archie would have been one of the alternative, like, narrative-based...
Archie, Tintin. My dad used to give me a Tintin every Valentine's
Tintin's
Day.
Tintin's still dope. Like, I remember
growing
up. A
bit
on
the racist side, but, like...
Actually, yeah. I mean, I haven't read Tintin in years, but I remember reading it as a kid. Like,
I mean, I loved Tintin when I didn't really know any bit, and I still do. I mean, like... But, you know, it was also, like, really cool artwork styles.
That's the thing, like...
That was very different
to, very,
like,
distinct.
The... So... Yeah.
And also, like, you know... Well, actually, you know what I grew up on? Like, the thing... Like, we used to get the annual Beano.
Oh,
like,
my God!
Did you
God.
Ever, like, get those? Or,
yes,
like, you ever,
I
like,
did.
Yeah.
I looked at Beano and Dagwood, I think it was called... Yeah, like, I mean, like, when you got lucky, you got lucky. Like, you'd go into those bargain bins and you'd find something
like
really...
Like those paperweight stores.
Those paperweight... Oh, yes, yeah. Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
And, like, in high school also, like, I was always interested in comics, but I just didn't have the accessibility. So I think, like, now things are really changing for the better. We're getting more comic book stores all over the country. Like, there's a...
There's
one in Durban, Kapow, which is amazing, and I highly recommend anyone go and actually have a look there.
Yeah, they're actually pretty decent. I mean, like, even in, like, pricing and what they offer, like, in comparison to Joburg stores, they're up there.
Yeah, they're,
like,
up there.
Like,
I mean,
they don't have as much space and, like, as much inventory.
Oh, they're moving,
like,
upstairs now, so they're going to have a lot more space.
Sick.
Yeah.
Because... But yeah, like, I mean, you know, you go to somewhere like Comic Warehouse where they've got, like, I maybe shouldn't talk too much shit, but, you know, they've got this name behind them, but, you know, what's on offer is the same as everywhere else, and they're, like, a bit more pricey and stuff like that. Whereas yeah. Kapow's, like, yeah, got, like, a, they get all the new stuff in pretty often.
Yeah.
And they recently, they've got a decent range of, like, older stuff as well. So
oh, yeah.
You can find, like...
Like, the Invisibles. I've seen the Invisibles there. I've seen some Hellboy, like, original Hellboys. Like, they've got some really, really good stuff, actually. And it is a bit
that's
more...
That's rare for Durban.
Like, that is.
To be
and
able
I mean,
to
like,
find, like, comic books, like, that are, like... You know, not just at CNA without the fucking backboards and
yeah.
without, like, oh.
It's just, like, completely, like, out of
And you're
sync.
Paying, like, 120 Rand for
yeah.
something that's, like, you should be paying, like, 60 to 80, depending, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Kapow's amazing. And also, like, the guy who runs it, Sean, is, like, a huge comic book fan. And, I mean, like, that is really
that
cool.
That matters
too.
A lot.
Like, I mean, he... Yeah, because he's so passionate about it. And it's really, really fucking cool. Like... You just talk to him and he's got this almost like childlike look in his eye whenever he's talking about comics, and it's so sweet, you know. Like, whereas there are other comic book shop owners that I know from Joburg and Cape Town who
just
are
super cynical.
Yeah, they're cynical because they've had to be. I mean, like, he's coming in at the right time. They've been in the market for so long, and
yeah.
know, the guy who owns, he's like, oh no, fuck this. Like, I just wish I'd never got into this cursed thing, you know?
Oh, man. Like, it's funny because there's a... Oh, I can't even remember the name of it, but there was this dope comic store in Edenvale that's closed down. And, like, that was, like, my favorite place in the world to, like, go to. And, like, yeah, now you've got places like Comic Warehouse opening up and you've got, like, all these other new stores. Like, you've got a comic store in Durban. And it's, like, it's weird, like, some stores just missed, like, you know, this recent
yeah.
boom. So, yeah, it's pretty cool that, you know, all these stores, like, well, that Durban has a comic book store and that, like, you know, even in Joburg, new stores are popping up, even
yeah.
though some older ones have died and that. And stuff like Comic-Con, you know, like, because you've obviously seen FanCon grow, you've obviously seen Icon grow,
mm.
and you've now seen Comic-Con, but did you ever expect it, like... Because growing up, like, we were ostracized, fucked for liking comic books. Like, whether you liked Spider-Man or, like, you liked Archie, you were a fucking weirdo that, like,
oh,
other
yeah.
people didn't fuck with. So now it's, like, just mainstream culture. It's just a part, like, Disney, the biggest company, like, one of the biggest companies in the world, like, you know, is putting out comic book movies constantly, essentially. Yeah, not comic books that you like, necessarily, but
I still think we should be a little bit concerned by one corporation, like, releasing so
hella
much.
Hella
concerned. Like, I mean, they've got Star Wars now. They've got, like, Marvel, I think.
Yeah.
They've
got Fox.
They've got Fox. I don't think they've got Spider-Man yet, but that might... Like, I think Sony's still got Spider-Man, but...
Yeah, there's talks. Like, there.
But, I mean, I think that's a little bit concerning, I won't lie. But... Yeah, I mean, like, there are, it has grown, and it is good, but we just need to also constantly remember that comic book movies are also comic book movies, and we also need to go back
buy
to the
books.
Source and buy comic books, because there's still this booming industry that is still not quite as mainstream as the movies, and often comics aren't actually made to be movies.
No,
you know?
Not at all.
And some comics are actually really beautiful just as being a standalone comic. And like, for instance, let's talk about Watchmen.
Yeah.
And Watchmen, I thought the movie was actually pretty good.
I thought the movie was better than the comic, and, like, I know I'll get crucified for saying that.
Oh my god.
But,
no, but
only because of the ending. So obviously the comic is great, like, it's a 12 book, like, fucking thing, like, and it's fantastic
but
throughout
they
11
had
the, of the books,
whole,
but it's just
the
12th book I don't enjoy.
But they had the whole thing with the, like, all the artists and stuff that were put on the island, and that was so cool, and they were going to, like, blast that in the middle of New York.
Yeah, okay,
like,
no, that was dope. Like, yeah.
And
no,
Ozymandias's speeches about
but,
semantics. Or, like, I mean, it was so beautiful. The book was so beautiful. And
yes,
I think
okay,
that the...
No, like, I don't know if I can say... I just preferred the ending of the movie to the ending of the book. And I thought the movie
okay,
was
fair
very,
enough.
Very good.
The movie was very... Like, Luke... you'll probably disagree.
I think we did disagree about it.
But I really liked the movie. I thought it was like the perfect kind of that. That is how you do a good comic book.
Have you seen The Boys yet?
No, I haven't.
I haven't either.
But with Watchmen, that was like, I mean, like for the first scene with the comedian.
Yeah.
Getting thrown out the window. I mean, that was like almost frame by frame the same. It was the comic. So I think they...
Sin City also did very well with that.
Yeah, well, the first one. I'm not too sure about A Dame to Kill For. I haven't really watched that one, but I've read the comic.
The movie wasn't as good as the first movie, but in terms of sticking to the comics... It was kind of more accurate in a weird way.
Okay.
Like, it seemed... But, like,
stylistically, was it still the same as, like, that Frank Miller...
Yeah, very much. It was just... But it was more disjointed in that Frank Miller way, almost. Like, I think A Dame to Kill For, if I remember correctly, like, the movie felt, like, a lot more like reading the comics. Like, for me,
That's
cause
interesting. That's actually interesting.
I think so, because, like, I mean, I haven't watched it in so long, but the original Sin City, I remember being a great movie. Like, but... like feeling too coherent, whereas like if you read the Sin City books, like you piece together the world like through pieces, essentially.
Because it's essentially a very noir
hello, like
so they don't ever give you too much. I mean, even in the artwork, you're not given
anything. Like,
you're just given like
black
negative
and white silhouettes and like I'm a big fan of like, especially Sin City. Like, I like Frank Miller's work. I like his writing, like, a lot. Batman was pretty good.
You should check out Criminal. Criminal is brilliant.
Okay,
we've got some. I'll lend you some. It's by Ed Brubaker. He's the writer.
No, I know him, yeah.
Very, very good. And also very noir in the whole crime, like, small...
What's cool about comics is that you can have all these different genres, and it's not just superheroes.
Absolutely not. I mean, like, there's some of the French comics are some of my favorites. Like,
is it like surreal stuff? Or
that, like... It's like Mobius, which is like kind of fantastical but so weird and so amazing, and then Philippe Droulet, who's like also so strange and almost like occult in, like, you know, how he writes and how he creates his world. There's people like Dan Klaus, who's like extremely either like dealing in ghost world, like with the absolute mundane, or going to the other end of the spectrum and talking about like such surreal stuff, while still trying to link it to genres that you know, so it makes it even weirder. And then, you know, you get, like, things like Black Sad, which is, like, a beautiful comic book. The artwork is absolutely stunning. And it's a crime noir, but all the characters are animals. They're very, like, you know, they look like people. With, like, you know, they're bipedal and they've got hands and stuff. But they, like, Black Sad himself is, like, a cat with a little, you know, bit of white on his chin. And... you know, they deal with such interesting stories. And the great thing about comics is you have, like, that ability to do anything. Because you don't have to worry about a huge movie budget.
No.
You just have to... All you have to worry about is...
Can I hire someone to draw it?
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. Like, my friend Kerry, who does the Tech Noir...
Tech Noir looked super dope. I didn't get it because
I'll lend you. We've got like all of his stuff.
I will eventually get it for myself because really like the look of it, really like the vibe. But yeah, I only
very
had
cyberpunk.
So much money to spend on that day.
I know. I like also had to. Normally, in the past, I've had like an actual job, so I've been able to just like blow thousands at a convention, but like now that I'm a freelancer, it's like,
but,
okay, I've got a certain
but now you get to trade, but you're still trading on your cost price and like you're
exactly. And also, like, honestly, I didn't take enough comics up this time. Like, next year I'm definitely gonna get a stall.
Oh, your own stall.
Yeah.
That's cool. And I was chatting to you like earlier, just saying like, obviously, like, the con thing must help in terms of just getting to come out of your shell a bit more.
Oh,
like,
absolutely. Like, honestly, it's been... Because, like, honestly, the people that participate in these cons are so supportive and so amazing. And everyone's kind of in the same boat. Like, there's this thing called that everyone kind of talks about the imposter syndrome.
Oh, God, yeah.
Where you feel like you don't actually belong there.
Yeah, 100%.
And that, I think, comes from, you know, a lot of us being from a very similar background. You know, being kind of like weirdos in high school or college or whatever.
So society in general doesn't necessarily support you and your dreams and what you do.
Yeah, but then, like, you know, you come to these cons in the first few years, yeah, you have that a bit. But then, like, as you start to, like...
Because you also see other people whose work is, like, nuts!
But, like, the cool thing is, they come to your... Those people that you think, oh my god, they're unattainably good, they're so good. They come to your stalls and they're like,
I love that. Yeah.
So there's so much support that happens in the comic book scene in South Africa at the moment. It's actually, it almost gives me goosebumps. Like, it's so beautiful because it's not like, you know, the music scene or the tattoo scene, which can come across as being a bit like intimidating or like a little bit like, ooh, you know, people are trying to, I don't know, but
compete a bit more,
but like, people in the comic book scene are so happy that someone else has decided to, like, do this thing of making a comic book that they are so supportive. And it doesn't matter if you've just released a tiny A5 five-page comic or if you're, like, Daniel Hugo, who's released, like, tons and tons of comics and is the most amazing artist.
Yeah, like, his stuff is so good. He's another one who, like, I'm like... I'm gonna save some money for next year's con and I will buy your work. Like, just because, I mean, not that he charges a lot at all. It's just like, you know, everyone else is doing the cheap self-published stuff for like $50, $80. Is that, you know, he's got like really good books for like $250. Like, but like really good books.
I'd suggest like now they've compiled the Sector books, if I'm not mistaken, into like one.
Have they done a compendium for it?
Yeah.
Because like, I saw they've got them all there. Like, I don't know if they've got them all together.
I saw on Facebook and they were thinking about doing that. And also, so I think like that might be a good way to like actually just spend a bunch of money on like something that is really worthwhile because it's got everything in there. I'm a huge supporter of not buying like those little like, you know, the singles. I like buying like the compiled editions of things.
See, but the singles, you know, long term will hold more value.
They might, but like they look so nice on a shelf when they've got a spine and they've got like, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's just I just know that single issues, like, as time goes on, like,
I'm not in it to, I mean, I've got a very, like, between Luke and I, we've got quite an impressive...
I can imagine you guys must have quite an impressive collection.
Yeah, you must come over one day and see your comic book shelf. It's...
I'd probably, like with some friends, I do that with their books. I'm like, oh, you got this! Oh, you got this! Oh, you got this! Like, I can imagine, like, you guys, like, with comic books, I'm just going to be, like, that just for an hour. Like... Yeah.
We've got a very comfortable couch. You're welcome to sit on the couch and read comics. Like, we don't really lend them out, but...
But, so how did you get into creating comics? Because, like we were saying, like, you did Michaela's Fine Art. You didn't necessarily feel like that was for you.
When I was at Michaela's in my final year, I kind of found my feet a little bit. Because, like, before that, in my theory side, I'd be doing really well, like hitting 80s or 90s. But then my practical side would be, you know, barely passing.
What were your lines too thick, or like, what was it?
Oh,
like,
it was just like everything about me. I don't know. I tried so hard. I was like, oh, I just don't know what to do.
There's nothing about your style that's fine art. Like,
I know.
Nothing. And like, well, I love your work, like with a passion. Like, I really, like your layer, like the one I sent you as a reference for the Heat City thing. Like, I absolutely love that. Like, and it's just so simple. Like, and it's like, I love that. I love your Avocat universes, like, you know, the ones you create, those big, like, the one, like, the temple. That's such a cool piece, but, like, I can imagine that kind of line work is not what they want in fine art, or, like, that kind of colouring.
I mean, I got criticised a lot for being too cartoony, or, you know, too over-exaggerated with my stuff, and, like, You know, it was very disheartening, and honestly,
yeah,
you're
not realistic in your
opinions. I wasn't realistic at all. I'm not a realistic. I can do it now. I've tried to perfect that because I'd worked with a jewelry design company, and I had to do hyper realistic jewelry, well, renditions of their rings and stuff. But back then, that wasn't what I wanted to do. What the fuck, man? Like, so it was very disheartening, and I thought about dropping out a lot, but then I was like, you know, my parents have paid so much money for me to be here. I'm gonna try
but
to.
Also, congrats on getting in there. Like, that's
Thank
not
you.
Easy.
Thank you.
Like,
no, it isn't. I don't know. Honestly, I have no idea how my entire degree went. I don't know how I got in.
I feel like quite a few people might feel that way after, because I've chatted to people not on this course, but like. Even people who are doing art, you know, like, not illustration, essentially, you create the difference. And, like, obviously it's all art, but under those terminologies and stuff. But, like, even those people who are doing art are like, yeah, no, Michaela's, like, definitely made me see my life. Like,
yeah. It deconstructs everything you think you know about everything. And then you have to, it forces you, and this is the one good thing about that place, which is, like... it makes you reconstruct yourself brick by brick, like, you know, in a way that you might not be entirely comfortable with, but you need to actually address. And that, I think, was the best things about Michaela's. Like, it wasn't helping me with my practical side, because honestly, like, I felt like me just working on my own over the years really just, like, helped with my skills and, like, helped with where I was going artistically and aesthetically. But in terms of, like, almost a philosophical or mental kind of space, that is what Michaela's did for me. And it was tough, and honestly, I really would not recommend anyone go there if you're not, like, really into fine art. But at the same time, I'm quite grateful.
It's also hard to know if you're into fine art at, like, 17, 18.
Exactly, yeah. Because
fine art's a thing, I think, maybe...
I feel like I should have actually probably just gone straight into
graphic design,
but also...
But did you worry that that would just sounded like a lesser degree, or what was the thing? You didn't think you were learning enough skills from it?
I don't know what it was. I think, honestly, I didn't think at all about my career, and I my mom said, oh, there's this thing called fine art. And I looked at it and I was like, okay, cool, I'm doing that. And I applied to fine art, and like my second option was like philosophy, no, psychology.
Philosophy, yes, psychology, no. Although maybe these days I would be like, psychology, yes, philosophy, no. I don't know, both will fuck you up.
Both will fuck you up, royally. But like Michaela's was the, like, I got replies from like Rhodes and from Tux and from,
so obviously your work in high school was pretty good.
It was good. It was more realistic, but it
because that's what you learn in school though as well.
It does. Yeah. Well,
you
I
get
mean,
taught
stuff
like you get taught still
to,
life in school and shit.
It's very hard to actually be taught art. Like, I still can't really wrap my head around it. It's like you just look at the thing and draw it.
Well, it's giving you examples. Someone tells you techniques.
Techniques, yes, and like materials, yes, and like how to use materials, but like with art, like, you have to have that interest and that like drive to like, oh my god, I've seen this thing and I really want to draw that. Kind of recreate that in some way. Or even now that I'm also like into comics and into storytelling, it's like, oh, I just thought about this thing just before I went to sleep, and I really need to like put that down because I think that will really work.
Well, is that something that comics has taught? Well, it's something about comics that's very different to fine art, is that you have to think about a whole entire storyline. Like, you have to, like, because like with fine art, you're creating one piece that, yes, it's expressing something, but like it's all there in that thing. There's no turning the page with the fine art piece. Whereas with comics, you've got to create a narrative now. You've got to not just create that, you've got to create a whole universe. You've got to create stuff that's concise. It's writing. It's a lot of it is now writing. It's not just art.
Well, going back to my time in Michaela's, and I will answer this, but like, my final piece was like the, we had to submit a catalogue of our work, and we had to have a theory, a practical, you know, actual artwork, and we had to have like a dissertation. My catalogue was a comic book. It was me having a discussion with my laptop in comic book form about where we came from, because my whole thing was about indentured laborers of Indian people. Because I thought, you know, I needed to, like, actually...
I'm going to say, oh, you don't want to bring up the POC thing.
Yeah, right? No. Like, I thought, like, okay, this will get me some bursts or whatever. It didn't, but...
is it? It didn't? That's
how... So I was making cartoons. Like, it wasn't...
The context was great. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Like, so I made this cartoon, and I was basically talking about... where did you come from, computer? And my computer was replying to me, and like it was pretty funny as well.
Cool.
And I mean, it did pretty well. Like, people liked it. But and then my final year artwork was an animation, a 15-minute animation on, like,
good.
It was like I was trying to tie in the architecture of Grey Street, which I love.
Yeah.
With,
like, just
like
Art Deco mixed with
Art Deco,
like
anything,
yeah, with
like
everything, with apartheid, with like,
yeah,
yeah, like with like German, like 1800 shit,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Yeah, like,
and like tying it into, like, you know, people that have actually written about this particular space, and like historians, I researched, like, and interviewed and rotoscoped historians that actually, like, were very invested in this space, and I made this little documentary, and I exhibited that, and, like, you know, so yeah.
Was animation stuff you want to go into?
It used to be, but, like, to be honest, like, I don't know. I don't know if I have the patience. I know most people would
say, it's a lot of fucking work. God,
you don't have the patience to make a comic. But, like, I really do not have the patience to make an animation.
Comics
I have
slightly
a, I
less
tap my
work.
Ha- yeah,
like...
slightly less work. For, but, like, I mean, I tap my hat to animators. They are incredible.
Yeah,
and...
no, 100%. Like, that, no, like, that is a level of dedication that, like, I can't even imagine. Because there's no parts about that that doesn't take time.
Oh.
You can't whip up a quick animation.
I was trying to, like, rotoscope, and, like, I was literally doing 30 frames a second. 30 frames.
So you've got to draw 30
frames.
So
you draw something, and then you draw it again, but slightly different. Like, literally 30 of those for
one second.
And then you've got a 3-minute interview. So, I mean, like, my life in my final year at Michaela's was, like, non-existent. I did not leave my room.
Wow. It does give you, like, a big appreciation for, like, Looney Tunes. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Jeez. Those guys, I mean, those people were doing, like, hand-rendered stuff. Like,
yeah,
that is...
Like, every frame.
Every single frame. Like,
and just
crazy.
The writing on that stuff was also some high-level stuff. No, like, genuinely.
Like, yeah.
Like, the 50s, 60s, like, era of Looney Tunes is, like, honestly just some high-tier, like, comedy. Like, I'm a big fan. Like, yeah, there's actually this podcast called The Rule of Three. And Phil Jupiter, so I don't know if you know him, he's a British comic. He spoke about Chuck Law, who wrote a lot of the... comics, wrote a lot of the scripts and stuff for.
Oh, really? Chuck Moore. I've heard that name around.
Yeah, you definitely, if it comes
okay.
to Warner Bros., like,
yeah.
you would have seen a lot of his work, like, a lot, like Roadrunner. And all
oh,
that.
Okay,
like,
cool.
Yeah. So, Roadrunner. Bugs Bunny was, like, he did that a lot as well. And just, man, like, so that's the thing, like, that's what's dope about comics is this art form. It really does, like, it's. But. For you guys, I guess it's a little different because what I was going to say, it's such a cool team experience. Like, you know, you've got the writer, you've got the illustrator, you've got the inker, you've got all of this, but you've got you.
Yeah. I don't know. I Luke and I want to...
create something together.
Yeah, we want to create this...
Do
like,
you really, though?
No, we do. We've got, like, the
characters...
Are you
characters. Not worried?
No, I think we'd work...
Do you guys work well together? Like,
we do. Because
you guys have a... company together.
I mean, like, we were, like, well, we don't have a company together, well, actually, but we
do work together.
We work from home, and he works on one side of our studio, and I work from the other side.
The what was it?
Bedell. We had the Billy and Bedell.
Yeah, yeah. You're not doing that thing at the moment.
No, it's, we've just got other stuff that we need to do.
Okay.
But I mean, I enjoy doing it. But he scripted a couple of my AvoCat stuff actually.
I can imagine he's good at that.
Yeah, he was amazing, and we've got an idea for a.
He understands structure very well.
Yes. Oh. He is like, he could probably write dissertations on comics and like.
We're just reading his comics, like, you get, like, he understands how.
Oh, yeah.
It all
he's
works.
Very, very technical. And I mean, like, he gets really annoyed if people don't have, like, you know, their
stuff in the right place.
Stuff in the right place, or if you've got your speech bubbles and you don't have your text aligned inside the speech. Like, that
oh,
is a huge
yes.
No no.
I agree. Like, I agree. Thank you. Like, please make it easier for me to read. Like,
exactly. It does distract you. And sometimes you don't even realize that this is happening. But, like, anyway.
Well, it's design. And
it is design. But we have been talking about collaborating on a comic called. Night Town, I think we've decided.
I can imagine
on.
You guys would do something dark and funny.
It's very, yeah, it's dark and funny. It's like a crime noir, but like set in this like kind of like demon universe.
Yeah, it sounds
and,
about right.
You know, like there's starlets that, you know, have gone missing or have died, and there's like a
the
PR,
noir classic.
You know, the noir, like kind of poking fun at the genre, but also kind of like, you know, it's a love letter towards the genre because we both love noir and
yeah.
like crime noir. So that's in the works when we actually have some time, but like Luke's also got so many comics that he's producing, and I've got a lot of like both paid work and my own work, which is not necessarily paid work.
But your own work does pay off eventually, like when you sell
it
as comics.
It does, it
like
does. No,
get to
no.
Like...
I mean, like you... But
you...
we... Bear in mind, we do... We've done Icon, FanCon, and Comic-Con, and that's probably what we're going to do again
but
next
online
year.
Stuff?
We haven't really gotten there yet, eh? Like, it's... Like, it will happen. It's just,
I think setting up an online store is, like, absolutely necessary for what you do.
Yeah, it's just, like...
If you guys have physical products...
I feel like I need a personal assistant so that I can, like, work on my thing and then, like, someone can just, like, send out my orders. So I might actually recruit someone to do that at some point so that they can, like, work with my store and, you know... Because at the moment, it's a little bit too
overwhelming. You just don't have the time.
I don't have the time or energy. I also have a 2-hour nap during the day, so that would cut into my nap time.
Yeah, you know, maybe make it like an hour and a half nap and you can send out some orders, you know? Like, I'm just saying, like, you could increase your income.
Okay, look, I work till, like, very late at night, so, like, I need
no,
to have
No, I'm with
two.
You. I do the same thing some days because, like, I'm usually up until about 2 or 3 and mm-hmm. get up around 8, 9-ish.
Yeah.
And so an afternoon nap, when you do that, is
yeah.
very, very necessary.
It just helps out. Like, you've got to get enough sleep in your life.
So, what's next? What are you working on at the moment?
Well, I need to... My other comic, the first comic I ever put out called The Rusty Bolt, I need to get
yes,
back to that.
I've got The Rusty Bolt, yes.
And I will expand on that universe. I've got a lot of plans for that.
Like, what's the vibe with Rusty Bolt? Like, it's... Like, not cyberpunky, but like influenced a bit by it, or like...
You know what it was? I read a book by Mark Twain. I think
cool.
it was called, like, On the Road. No, that's Jack Kerouac.
Yeah.
It was, like, the one where he's, like, kind of traveling on a train. I can't remember the name right now.
Me neither.
But... I read that book on audiobook, and it was just so amazing because there was all these like old barflies that were just talking about their exaggerated experiences, and I was so fascinated by that, and I really, really just, because I love like going to bars and listening to the barflies, these
so
old
like Western,
dudes,
like,
all these, yeah.
Yeah.
like, you can even find a Western kind of story at the bar at Amsterdam or at La Bella, you know? Like, you hear these stories that are so exaggerated, so extra, you know, it's fantastical. And I love that. I fell in love with listening to these stories of these, like, because I just, like, go to bars in Cape Town before Luke moved down when we first moved there. Then we moved back. thank God. And, like, I just go to bars and, like, just listen to these old ladies or old dudes. And, like, I find it fascinating. And that really informed the Rusty Bolt. And I was really inspired by Philip K. Dick.
Oh, I think, nice.
And Gnosticism, which he references a lot in his books. So I think the universe will expand, but, like, I think Avocat probably has a better chance right now. So that's why I'm working more on Avocat, but the Rusty Bolt 2 is coming.
There was actually something, like, you kind of bring it up, and I guess we can talk about before we close this. The commercialization of all of this, like, do you feel weird about the fact that it's now this big commercial thing, or was it always the thing? Like, people were always trying to sell comics. People were always trying to sell their art. Like, you know, and for yourself, you even making those decisions now of, like, well, I've got to go with Avocat. And obviously you love Avocat, but Rusty Bolt's, like, you know, this thing that you also love and you probably wish, you know, you could...
had the time and all that.
And the time, money, everything. But you know that if you spend more time on Avocat now... like, that it'll sell more and you'll make more money.
Well, definitely, like, I think like that. I think of, like, what's going to make me the most money. And, like, honestly, I want to put out there, like, really good content that people want to actually support. So Avocat is still, like, you know, very, very meaningful and, like, it's good content.
Yeah, we're not talking about Avocat, like, Avocat sucks and it's just this thing you're doing
but I'm, like, yeah, but, like, Avocat is probably the more marketable thing at the moment.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of creatives will probably, like, stone me to death right now, but, like, honestly, I love both my comics, but Avocat is the thing that sells. And I identify that and I have to run with it. And when I've got, like, a bit of capital to support the Rusty Bolt, then I'll go back to the Rusty Bolt. And it's not because I don't like the Rusty Bolt as much.
You just understand the market.
It's just I understand the market. And, like, you have to think
in
a business.
It's like Preacher
didn't
sell as much as Batman. It's just, like, it's exactly. A simple thing. Like,
that's a great way of putting it.
Like, we know...
I'm so honored to be compared to that.
But it is. Like, I mean, you know, Dark Horse... Wait, they are Dark Horse, not Image. Yeah. I was, but, like, you know, eventually getting bought up by DC and stuff, you know? But, like, yeah, like, something like Preacher, people wouldn't even know about. So,
yeah.
Like, if they weren't bought out by DC eventually.
Exactly.
So, like...
So, yeah. Like, Cat's in a huge... avocado shaped guac rocket. Like, I understand, like, people,
like,
absurdism is going to, like, kind of trump, like, this weird, like, philosophical Gnostic kind of book that I want to write about robots, like, which is still interesting, but, like, you know, you have to think about what's gonna sell.
Yeah, you're not gonna get people walking past your booth looking at it and picking it up and going, yeah, that's what I want.
Exactly.
Like, essentially, you're gonna get other people going, this was a good book, you should pick it up.
Exactly.
And once again, like, what are the, like, I mean, obviously you're selling stuff online, but I get, like, the volume of stuff you sell in a con must be much higher than, in a month, like, of online.
Oh,
sales.
Yeah. I think South Africans are still quite, they're not really into the whole, like, buying online from other South Africans sort of thing. So I know
they'll,
like,
buy from Amazon.
Yeah, we'll buy from Amazon and we'll buy from Takealot, but, like, you know, if we're buying from creators, it's a little bit,
well,
like,
you don't
sketchy.
Know that they're gonna send it to you, like,
yeah,
you know,
but I mean, like,
I
have
time
and
frame.
I mean, they do, I mean, like, it's these, like,
yeah,
young creators who just want to, like, actually get their stuff out there, and they look at, like, the people on Instagram who are doing it and making livings off this from, you know, Canada or Sweden or, you know, the US or whatever, and they want to emulate that. But at the same time, there's so many connotations that you have with the South African, like,
market,
you know, market.
And, yeah.
So that's, I think, another thing that's prevented me from actually selling my stuff online. I do okay with cons enough to like kind of just like, and I've also got other paid work to subsidize myself. So I'm not like just only relying on my fun stuff to make a living and pay my rent. So
yeah. For now, hopefully one day.
One day. Also, if I, you know, if I get my shit together and get a web store that is trustworthy to other South Africans, then maybe.
Yeah, I don't know why you and Luke don't do that. Like, it would be a good, like.
Oh my god, can you imagine Luke, like, the amount of stress he'd go through? Just like,
no, you guys hire someone else to do it.
Okay, yeah, if we had to do that, maybe.
Yeah, hire someone else, let them take a decent percentage of the profits, and you get the rest. Like, you work on what you want to do.
Probably going to end up being my mom.
Yeah, so if anyone other than Tasman's mom wants to do that, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram. My Instagram handle is attached to your write-up of this.
Okay.
Or it's at TazBedeviled with two L's.
I like that you know what I put in the write-up, so you've got to check
that. Yeah, I think rather do that, because like, there's two spellings for bedeviled. So.
Okay, I feel you. And then also, you've got the coolest websites like in the country.
Thank you.
Tasman.co.za.
A friend got that for me. I was like, whoa, I didn't even realize I actually have that space open.
So. Yeah, like that was a good hustle. Like, www.tasman.co.za. So if you want to check out Tasman's work.
And if you want
to contact
me. Although
you need to update it more.
Please. I know, I am going to. I'm just like, yeah, this is what my future.
No, I know what it's like. Like, you've got the stuff like that makes you money and all the other things that you actually have to do, that updating stuff, you know, gets picked
up. Yeah, but it is very important, so I will get to it, so.
Yeah, and any cons coming up? Anything else happening?
FanCon for sure.
When's FanCon?
That is, I think, that's in June. June, July, because there's...
That's early in the year for me.
there's Comic-Con Cape Town that's happening.
Probably like March, isn't it?
It's take kind of not fan.
It's
kinda.
March or May. It's one of the ends.
Yeah. I think at the end of March, April, I think it's
okay.
Somewhere around there. So they've taken the slot of FanCon, and FanCon has moved to like July or something.
Okay.
So I'm not sure, like flying to Cape Town is quite expensive, so I don't know if I can do the both of the trips, but I'd love to, if I could, because I'd love to be part of the first Comic-Con Cape Town. But
does
the Comic-Con, next one...
Does Cape Town have more of like a scene for comics?
They do, and there's like a lot of creators in Cape Town, and they're very interesting. It's a very interesting space. And there's also a lot of support for local comics. Like, every single time I've sold stuff at a FanCon, there's been like, you know, Clarks or, you know, various bookstores that have come and like bought like, you know, 8 or 10
actual bookstores.
Yeah. And they buy stuff not on consignment.
Not even consignment. Awesome.
That's it's a really, really great deal. So they buy like 8 or 10 at a time.
Because I can imagine you give stuff a consignment, it comes back all buckled and fucked up.
Yeah,
and, like,
consignment isn't a vibe. I don't fuck with that shit.
Yeah. But cool. So people can find you at the cons, they can find you online.
Online, and if you do really want something shipped to you, please just let me know and I will make a plan.
Or your assistant will make a plan.
Or my assistant. My future assistant.
The future assistant will make
a
plan.
Who's probably going to be my mom.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks,
this has
Bob.
Been great.
Yeah. Thanks.